Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high.
Welcome to episode 16 of Across the Bifrost. I'm your host, Sung Soo, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Pat Dunford. Before we jump into that, I want to thank Discount Games Incorporated for partnering with us and helping us do all the giveaways we've been doing through Patreon, and for the Australian Wildfire Relief, which we're wrapping up today. And I want to thank Muse on Minis, creators of high-quality wargaming products. I love the additional tokens and stuff I've gotten from Muse on Minis, and Muse and I are working on a few custom things for the future. So thank you so much, and I hope to see you guys out at MuseCon this June. Lastly, I do want to mention the Patreon, patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. This supports Pat and I directly, helps cover our hosting costs, pays for microphones, things like that. And Pat and I are hoping to use it to actually meet up at a Marvel Crisis Protocol event this year. So if you like the pod and are in a place financially to support us, either $1 or $2 an episode, jump over to patreon.com/acrossthebifrost for full information. If you like the pod but you aren't in a place to support us financially, that's okay. We still love you. Any likes, shares, or comments on social media go a long way in helping to get our listenership increased. So again, thank you so much to everyone who listens, whether you're able to support us or not. All right. Without any further ado, here's my conversation with Pat Dunford about the Guardians of the Galaxy. On the line now, my co-host and friend from across the pond, Pat Dunford. Pat, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, son. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I can't get rid of this cough. I've had it for like 4 months now. I don't know if it's tuberculosis. I don't know what's going on. But otherwise, I'm great. How was your weekend?
It's been really good. Sorry to hear about your cough, but on the bright side, you're pretty good on the mute trigger, so please just keep that up. I'm sure it'll be fun.
Thanks. I was a little behind the curtain there. I don't know if people know that, but yeah, I definitely, if you're recording a podcast, you should mute yourself when you're not talking, except in the beginning of the podcast where you want to take background noise so you can run a noise reducing filter. So there you go. Podcasting 101.
Wow. I have no idea what you just said, but that's cool.
So at the beginning of every pod, I take when I'm talking, because I do the intro, I take your audio and I run a pattern filter on it, and then I do a noise reduction based on that pattern, so it pulls the background noise out of your microphone.
That sounds very sci-fi.
It's not very sci-fi. You can look it up on YouTube. I'm really bad at audio editing. There are people who are like probably yelling at me because I'm doing it wrong. But this is what happens when you learn how to audit podcasts by watching YouTube videos. So before we dive into the episode, I do want to wrap up the Australian giveaway. We donated our Patreon revenue for February. And we obviously ran a raffle where people were renting a garbage truck. So first, I want to congratulate Brent Giancarlo for winning the garbage truck. Thank you so much. That'll be going out to you via Discount Games Incorporated. And I'm happy to announce that we were able to donate $357 to Wires for Wilderness Relief. I know the fires are controlled down there in Australia, but believe it or not, there was a lot more they have to do down there. So thank you everyone for donating. It was really cool, and I was happy to send that money down to Wires.
That's awesome. That's really great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Without any further ado, Guardians of the Galaxy. Atomic Mass Games has given us a ton of content on their stream from last week and a couple weeks ago. We've got a lot to kind of go over. We're just going to do three characters, Star-Lord, Rocket, and Groot. We're going to try really hard to keep this episode to 45 minutes, but this one might be pushing it. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump in. Pat, are you comfortable starting with Star-Lord?
Yeah, let's do it. He's the leader. Let's start with him.
He is the leader, and they went with the kind of movie look to him. So Star-Lord's an interesting character. What do we think of him, Pat?
So yeah, he's definitely interesting. He's interesting in particular because he's really simple, right? He doesn't have a lot of superpowers. He's kind of straight and to the point. I like that he is cheap. He's 3 cost for a leader, which helps the whole Guardians of the Galaxy affiliation squeeze more and varied characters into their roster. And I like that he's customizable because you can give him a power gem and make him a more powerful 4-point choice as an alternative. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, not to simplify him, but he's basically just like a blaster, right? He's just a range 4 double energy blaster. And there's nothing wrong with that. But just when we compare him to other leaders, he definitely has less text on him, right?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, it's a great point about him being a blaster because he's the first dedicated blaster for 3 cost, right? And what I mean by that is basically the only thing he does is shoot things at range, and he does it really well. And if you compare him to other blasters, you've basically got Shuri and Iron Man. Iron Man doesn't hit as hard as him, and both because his default attack is less powerful and because his spender is less powerful, but he's tougher. Shuri is capped at only doing one damage with her long-range blasts. And then I guess you've got Winter Soldier, who is good up close, but only does four damage with his range blast as well. So of all the three cost characters, Star-Lord just pumps out the most damage at range, which immediately gives him a niche that you might want in your team.
Yeah, and I do think that we both agree, like, while we're calling him a blaster and we're kind of shoehorning him into that, because of the full auto wild trigger for Elemental Blast, he's actually pretty flexible, right? So what that is for his paying attack, which is just a range 4 energy blast, 7 dice, he has a wild trigger, and after resolving this, for each wild in the attack, the defending character gains one of the special link conditions. That's bleed, shock, slow, or stun. So while, yes, at the core, he's just a blaster, there's a lot of like control and soft control elements built into that as well.
Yeah, specifically for that one attack, but it's a really good attack. One thing that I wonder with Star-Lord is how often are you going to take the power gem? It's interesting with him because he only has one ability on his card that costs power, right? He's only got his more powerful attack with his elemental pistols. So how valuable is that, and how else might you use the power?
Yeah, we've talked about this in our roster, in our upcoming turn one tactics thing. Sometimes there's great benefit to being able to stack power on someone for paying those power or tactics costs. And it's interesting with Star-Lord. Like we said, obviously he's 3 points. He can tack the gem on himself. I believe it's a 1 point gem. We'll get to that in a minute. It's one, isn't it?
It is one, yeah.
Yep, which will put him up to 4 points. And I don't know is my a super high level answer. I really like him coming in at 3 points. I don't know that the additional power warrants it. Especially because I'm not entirely sure yet, because I haven't gotten them on the table that much, just a proxy game, how I'm going to be using this power, right? We talked about it in our roster building episode, talked about it in the tactics episode. How are you going to pay for these cards? How are you going to use these things? I don't know what card he's going to use where I need that much power.
Right. And then one thing that's particularly worth noting, I think, is obviously the power gem has a clear synergy with his attack because it gives him 3 power turn and his attack costs 3. Great. But of course, he's going to generate power in other ways as well. Every time he uses his free attack, he's going to generate power. Every time he takes damage, he's going to generate power. So he could easily end up in a situation where if he isn't playing tactics cards, he's got more power than he can actually use. And his leadership encourages you not to play tactics cards, right? Because you trade them in. We can talk about his leadership more in a second, but you trade them in for rerolls. So of all the characters in the game, he is less likely to want to spend a lot of power on tactics cards than many of the others.
Yeah, definitely. He doesn't have a great way of dumping his power, right? And we can go into his leadership here in a second. The other thing, like you said, he is 6 stamina, right? So like you said, he's going to just get a lot of power just from like getting the snot beat out of him. And again, just from like naturally gaining it through his element gun. So I'm curious. Like I said, I'm not saying I won't put the gem on him. I just think it needs more testing. And unfortunately, I just haven't had those games in.
Yeah. A couple of other things I wanted to talk about him as a character before we talk about his leadership. One is I like that he looks like kind of a pared back version of the 4-cost blasters. He looks a lot like Captain Marvel or Ultron or Vision, but without the bells and whistles, right? Without the special defensive ability, without the throw. He just has average base stats and a good range 4 free attack and a good range 4 7 damage spender, just like those three characters have. So he's very efficient for pure damage output. And if that's the role that you have for those characters in your team, then you might consider Star-Lord instead and just save a threat.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I do think that he has a lot of benefit just as a blaster, ignoring being the leading of the Guardians. I definitely think you'll find a role in a niche for him, very similar to how I think Black Panther is just kind of seamlessly fit into a bunch of lists. I think you could end up with a similar thing for Star-Lord.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing I wanted to mention is Plucky Attitude, because I think this ability is pretty cool, and I haven't seen it mentioned really anywhere. When people have been looking at Star-Lord, people seem to ignore it. And I can understand why, because it's really hard to quantify, right?
It is definitely a lot of dice math involved with it.
Yeah, so because it's Dithmath, what I did before we started recording is I went to Jacob at Xavier Protocols. Jacob does his amazing blog, and he's created Jarvis, which is a Dithmath calculator for Marvel Crisis Protocol. And I want to thank him so much because he spent the time over the last couple of days to work out how Star-Lord's plucky attitude works specifically so we could talk about it on the podcast. So thank you, Jacob.
Yeah, and real quickly, that is xavierprotocols.wordpress.com. You can go over there, check out all of Jacob's stuff. Jacob's in the Discord. He's very active in the Discord. And I think he might come on the pod in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. It'd be great to have him. So on the subject of plucky attitude, the way plucky attitude works is it lets you reroll all of your attack dice if you don't roll a hit, and it lets you reroll all of your defense dice if you don't roll a block. Keep in mind that because of the way that rerolls work, if you don't know already, this happens after your dice explode from crits. So what that means is your rerolls can't crit, but if you crit and get, for example, four total dice, you can then reroll them all, and you're rerolling four dice in your defense instead of three. So crunching
the math, you won't ever have that crit, right? Because of the way plucky attitude works?
Okay, here's the situation I'm thinking of. Tell me if I've got this wrong. Plucky attitude on defense is you can choose to reroll all of your dice unless you get a block, right? So if you roll all your dice and get crit, wild, blank, blank, you can use plucky attitude because you haven't got a block.
Nope, you're right. You're right. Nope, and I was thinking it triggered off of no success, but you were correct. It actually specifically triggers off no hits and no blocks. So good clarification. I was wrong. Good catch.
Yeah, so it's real confusing to know when it's good because, for example, the example I just gave where you get two successes, you probably don't want to reroll it. But this is why Jacob crunched the numbers, and he came up with some really interesting stuff. First up, plucky attitude is way better on defense than it is on attack. There's two reasons for this. One, on defense, you only have one result out of eight that gives you a block. But on attack, you have two results out of eight that give you hits. So you're just much more likely to get the triggering condition of having no blocks than you are of having no hits. And second, you're rolling fewer dice on defense, which once again means you're more likely to have the triggering condition. So all of Star-Lord's defenses are three. And mathematically, the chance of being able to reroll with plucky attitude is about 60% of the time, slightly higher, 63%. So it will come up a lot when you're defending. And if you reroll whenever it will increase your average, and there's a big caveat here because sometimes that might be hard to figure out on the fly, but if you reroll whenever it will increase your average, then you'll do that 2/3 of the time that it comes up, which comes out to about 42% of the time, which is a lot. And looking at the dice math real deep, long story short, what that means is the average successes goes from the equivalent of three dice to the equivalent of four dice, almost exactly. So you can kind of think of Star-Lord's defenses as all being fours across the board because of plucky attitude, which is really cool.
No, it's excellent. And I think Jacob has an article coming out specifically about it as well. So again, xavierprotocols.wordpress.com. You can follow all of Jacob's articles there. Jacob and I actually met talking about dice math. He loves digging into these different things. Is there any, so that's great for defense though, Pat. Is there anything, what does it do to his attack numbers?
So the bad news is it doesn't do a lot, and that's because his attacks roll quite a lot of dice already. They do five and seven dice respectively. And so the chance of rolling no hits when there's two chances on each dice and you're rolling that many dice is not very good. So on the five dice attack, for example, it comes up 19% of the time. And on the seven dice attack, it's even less. And then of those times it comes up, you won't necessarily want to use it all the time. On the five dice attack, you want to use it 12% of the time. On the seven dice attack, once again, it's even less because of wilds. On the plus side, with your elemental gun, you get every wild you get gives you a different status effect. That's really great. But you can end up in some awkward situations where you've rolled your seven dice, you get two wilds and no other successes. Do you want to reroll that? Or do you just want to take two status effects and do little damage? So what it all washes out to is it's a really marginal increase. It will sometimes be useful. It increases your chance to do a little bit of damage. Like, it removes that really awful result where you do no hits, but it doesn't increase your attack by that much. It's way, way better defensively than it is offensively.
No, again, I think those are great numbers, great things to know. And yeah, I'm excited to see how Star-Lord actually works for everyone on the table. So we've kind of talked around this, but Star-Lord is the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think it's time we at least mention Winging It, right? His affiliation specific.
Yeah, so Winging It is a very cool, very unique leadership. I'm going to read it out word for word to make sure I get it right. Once per round, at the start of your turn, you may choose an allied character and discard a team tactic card to use this leadership ability. The chosen character gains 3 Winging It tokens. After rolling attack dice, defense dice, or dodge dice, it may discard 1 Winging It token to reroll up to 2 of its dice. Only 1 Winging It token may be discarded per roll. Remove all Winging It tokens from this character during the next cleanup phase. So that's a lot to digest. What do you think?
It's different. It's some more tokens I have to add to my token collection. It was really, really... I'm continued to be impressed by how Atomic Mass Games has surprised me with mechanics. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first thing I'll say. I would have not anticipated this for a very long time when I was thinking of different mechanics that are introduced into the game. It's creating a secondary currency, essentially, right? We can trade in tactics card for rerolls, but they're finite rerolls with a couple quantifiers on them. So I don't know. What do you think of Winging It, Matt?
Yeah, I think it's really, really cool. I also agree it's really creative. I love the theme of throwing out your plan and just doing what comes naturally, which is so fitting, both in terms of the name matching the flavor and in terms of fitting the team. I think it's good. I'd have no idea how good it is. I don't know if we're going to end up months from now thinking this is an awesome leadership or thinking that it is one of the less good leaderships. It's really hard to say. Thinking about times when it will be good, I like that it acts as a kind of way to forgive you for taking ambitious or niche tactics cards. Right, you can take cards that might not come up in the game or might be really expensive and difficult to use. But then if you see that the game is not heading in that direction, you can cash them in.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to ask you a question real quick, Pat. And I was thinking about this kind of knowing that this episode was coming up for us. Mm-hmm. On average, for a total BS number, how many unused tactics cards do you typically have at the end of a game?
Right, so that's really, I don't know, I haven't been recording it, right? And I have to say, as I play more, my average number goes down. When I started playing, I used 1 or 2 tactics cards a game. And there was definitely a bit of information overload where I couldn't figure out the right times to use my tactics cards and just spent my power on my character's abilities. But as I've become more experienced and adept at the game, my plan more often relies upon my tactics cards, and I'd be very reluctant to give them up. And as more tactics cards come out, I find it easier to create a set of tactics cards with a good range of costs so that I can use them all more easily. And I suppose a big culprit for this is right now I'm using a lot of advanced R&D. And advanced R&D is a tactic card that costs nothing, gives you more power. And I usually use that card, that power, to play a second tactics card. So it has massively accelerated the number of cards I use. But if I were to give you a ballpark number, I'd say maybe in the average game, I use 3 or 4.
Yeah, so I look back because I'm super nerdy and I put all my data in a spreadsheet after games. It's just over one, it's about almost 1.5 tactics cards unused per game for me. And I definitely 100% agree with you. In the beginning of my playing, when I didn't have like a great plan, I'm just like, I'm going to mash superheroes. I would find games where I would end up like, oh, I only use 1 tactics card. What am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. But definitely more and more. And the next episode coming out again is our turn 1 tactics plays. And then spoilers, we're using a lot of tactics on turn 1 in some of those lines. Mm-hmm. I found myself less and less with unspent tactics cards. That being said, I still find myself with 1. So I could definitely still wing it and see what happens.
Yeah. And one thing I'd add is this obviously changes, right? If your leadership is winging it. You, like I said before, you take more ambitious cards, you don't plan to play as many, and because of that, you're saving power, which you can use on other things. So although you give up your card, you gain the effect of winging it, which is really powerful, and you save power as well. So it has a second benefit that isn't immediately apparent. And I think I saw Omnus talking about this card, and what he said is, if you could have a tactics card that costs no power and just had the effect of winging it, it gave a character three sets of two rerolls, you would take that card every time. It would be amazing. So I think it's definitely fair to also just see it as a leadership that upgrades your tactics cards rather than replaces them.
Yeah, and I love Omnus's podcast, Omnus Protocol. You can check him out. And again, he's a patron in the Discord. Yes, that is a way to look at it, right? But we have the opportunity cost of, okay, what did we lose by selecting winging it as opposed to something else, right? Because obviously it's an affiliation ability. And we don't need to dive down that rabbit hole now. Just it's not a... You can't look at it in a vacuum like the way Omnus was pitching is what I was trying
to
say.
Yeah, for sure. It's complex. One thing I'd like to add on winging it, like maybe the last thing before we move on, is because of the nature of the effect, where you can only use it once around and it affects a single character, but it gives them lots of rerolls, so it affects multiple attacks or multiple defense rolls or dodge rolls, it's better on more powerful characters, right? You're going to get more mileage out of it on a character that's going to make multiple attacks or is going to be attacked multiple times. So it has inherent synergy with expensive characters. And the characters we're talking about today in Guardians of the Galaxy are not expensive.
No, they're not. And real quickly, I know we're probably going to go over time based on how long this has taken. Mm-hmm. I really like winging it with Thor and Doom Prophecy to open a round.
That's pretty cool.
I love Doom Prophecy. We're going to immediately activate Thor. He's not going to have any defense dice, right? So ignore that. I'm going to make two attacks, though, and I'm really going to leverage those additional two rerolls on those attacks. So for me, that's kind of the out-of-the-box synergy in the one game, again, that I got in with Star-Lord. I was using it that way, and it was Thor is real angry. The other thing is Thor does have an AoE, right, like Pat said. So you want to ensure that we can use these winging it tokens, right? So in the game I played, Thor was actually able to use all three offensively. Which was pretty nice. I know Doom Prophecy only helps with the strike, but again, I did the Thunder Call and just used Winging It on it as well.
That's awesome. And you get bonus MCU points for using the Pirate Angel in your Guardians of the Galaxy roster.
Absolutely. As Guardians of the Galaxy, here we go. So just kind of like recap thoughts on Star-Lord for me. I find it fascinating that he is our first character that can use the power. The character that he himself is so efficient, he doesn't need power at all. I think it's really, really interesting that he's the one that ended up with it. I think it's great to see these alternative currencies being introduced to the game. I'm excited to see Star-Lord both leading the Guardians and both as a random back row blaster being added into different affiliations. And I really, really want to mess around more with Loki and Star-Lord together just to really kind of stack on effects and see how they
just throwing in a bunch of negative effects and seeing if your opponent can handle it.
Yeah, exactly. If I can slow or shock or stun combined with moving people away and controlling placements, to me that's an interesting kind of placement soft control game that I think will be cool to see on the table.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm excited for Star-Lord. I think he's going to be pretty popular.
All right, is there anything else about Star-Lord, or can we jump over to the dynamic duo of Rocket and Groot?
I think we have to jump over now, else we're going to be talking about Guardians all night.
Well, we are going to talk about Guardians all night, but here we go. Rocket and Groot. Which one do you want to start with, Pat?
Let's start with Groot. Everyone loves Groot. He's a cool guy.
Everyone does love Groot. I don't know. I don't know if he associates with the male pronouns, but we can circle back to that later. But
oh,
Groot,
I've got no idea.
What does he do, Pat?
So Groot is a big, tough tree. He is really, really resilient. Probably the most resilient character we've seen for his cost. He's a modest 3 threat, but he's packing 7 health on both his healthy and his injured side, so 14 stamina. His defenses are fine. 4 physical is great, 2 energy is bad, and 3 mystic is average. But his best defensive ability is his superpower Living Plant, that for 2 power lets him remove 3 damage from himself. And this doesn't say once a turn, so he can use it twice and heal himself up to full no matter how much damage he's taken. So this is a really, really tough plant.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, just a ton of hit points. Both of his attacks are physical. Only one of them is named I Am Groot. And that's the attack I want to talk about real quickly. So it does cost a lot of power.
Yeah,
he wants
power.
The power gem. Yeah.
Yeah, Groot doesn't get the power gem. It's not lucky
enough.
No,
sadly. But before damage is dealt, he may throw a target character medium. So he just gets a throw off this thing, which is phenomenal. And then after the attack is resolved, the target character gains the stagger special condition. So that is brutal, right? Yeah. We're throwing them away and we're tossing a stagger on them.
And it's 8 dice. Like, this is a major attack. This is better than Hulk Smash, right?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it is also more power on a character that generates less, but it's real good. It's interesting because Groot is really hard to hurt, but I Am Groot is so strong that maybe you just don't try and hurt Groot, right? Maybe his thing is he's that character that you want to try and ignore and hope that he isn't too disruptive or difficult to deal with as you try and progress the game and take out other characters instead.
Yeah, he's a very, very interesting character. And at 3 points, he seems phenomenal. I'm really excited to see him kind of on the table. Did you want to talk about Tangling Vines real quick, Pat, just to wrap up his card?
For sure. I think Tangling Vines is important because I think it's his answer to what I just said about ignoring him, because it's his control ability. It's 2 power. You choose an enemy character within range 3 and they gain the Root special condition. Can you remember what Root does?
I believe Root makes it so you... Oh, man. Does it make you move slow? It makes you move short, right?
No, that is the slow special condition.
Oh, cleverly named. They got me again.
It's not very intuitive from the name. What Root does is it makes it so that whenever you use a reactive or active superpower, you have to pay an additional power before using that superpower. So it's basically like Loki's God of Mischief ability.
You're right. That is not how I would have named it, but I will remember it henceforth. I haven't gotten Groot on the table yet, but again, I'm super excited about it. Obviously done a lot of theory crafting around the big fella.
Oh yeah? What's your theory? What are you planning with him?
Well, we can talk about it at the end of the pod. I think it fits a little bit better after we cover kind of his partner in crime. Are we ready to jump over to Rocket, or is there anything else we really want to hit on with Groot himself?
The only thing I want to say about Groot is I don't know how good rooting things is. This is the first thing we've seen with Root. My experience with Loki is God of Mischief is fine, but it's not great. And I don't know how I feel about paying power to apply that effect to a single character. And I think the power of Root will go a long way to deciding whether or not you can afford to ignore Groot.
Tangling Vines is a very interesting rule. Really, Root, again, not what I was anticipating. Clearly, I confused it with slow, which are not the same thing. So it'll be interesting to see again, how it plays out in the table, how Groot's power management comes into play. Like I said, where is all this power coming from? But I'm excited for him. And at 3 points, I think he's going to see some play. And again, the hit point tanking of Venom has been interesting to see in the table. And I definitely think that Groot could obviously follow in those footsteps.
Sure. Last but not least, we've got Rocket, adorable Rocket. And he is probably the polar opposite to Groot, right? They're about as different as you could expect. Rocket is our most fragile character to date, with a very unimpressive stamina of 3 on his injured side and 3 on his healthy side. So 6 total, which is about as much as most characters have on one side. And his defenses aren't great either, with 2 physical, 2 energy, and 3 mystic. He is going to fall down pretty quickly, even though he has small stature that gives him cover. He's pretty fragile. On the other hand, he's incredibly good at shooting things. His plasma rifle is nuts. We were just talking about Star-Lord being a good blaster, and Rocket is better and cheaper.
No, so plasma rifle is his basic quote-unquote strike. It's a range 5 dice energy attack with the strike ruling on it, right? So he gains power equal to the damage done. So for a free attack, it is aggressive is what I will say.
Real aggressive. And then his Hadron Enforcer is no slouch either. That's his big spender. Range 5, 7 dice damage for 4 power cost with a really cool flurry effect called Vortex, which is a bit wacky, and I don't know how good it will be, but it's super cool. He's just going to be able to sit way back and blast things and be a real pain for the opponent.
Yeah, so real quickly, Pat, we kind of mentioned it. He's height one. Do we want to kind of go over how line of sight works for short models?
Yeah.
Because I think it's important when factoring in Rocket Recruit.
I think it's really important because I think height one is his best defensive ability. Because what height one means is he gets cover from height one terrain. That's irrelevant because he's got small stature. He always gets cover anyway. But size two or greater terrain blocks line of sight to him. And size 2 terrain is really common. I don't know about your experience, but for me, size 2 is the most prevalent size of terrain. There's always maybe 4 to 8 pieces on a given table. And because he's got range 5, it seems like, at least in theory, it should be quite possible for him to find a piece in a relevant spot on the table, sit behind it, and start shooting. And if he's sitting behind a size 2 piece of terrain, he can see all the opposing characters who are size 2 or more because the terrain doesn't block line of sight to them. But it blocks line of sight to him, so people can't retaliate. They can't return fire.
Yeah, and that's what I think is really, really interesting, right? I do agree kind of small stature, and we'll get to that a little bit later, always benefiting from cover is it's a fine defensive ability. But I think the biggest thing is literally just going to be to hide Rocket somewhere obnoxious where you can't see him. And he's just going to be shooting people with his plasma rifle and his hard-drawn enforcer for the entire game. I really like Rocket, his damage, his theoretical damage output for 3 points. Excuse me, for two.
Two points.
Is very high.
He's got nuts damage for points, right? Because his damage is up there with a 4-point blaster, but he costs half that many points. He's definitely our most efficient character for damage. And the question will just be, can his size one and his small stature do enough to keep him alive for long enough? Now, he does have a couple of other rules that really help that we've not mentioned. Booby traps is a nice way to do extra damage to characters who approach him. It gives him a little bit of area control and a disincentive to get near him to attack him with close range melee characters. And personal bodyguard means if he's paired with Groot, then he becomes really tough because Groot can take all the damage for him.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. So it's a zero-costing reactive ability, and it's when this character is target of an attack, an allied Groot within range 1 of this character, you may use a superpowered, and then the Groot becomes the target of the attack regardless of range and line of sight. So it's interesting. So Rocket and Groot obviously come in at 5 points together. They have different ranges, though, right? Groot definitely wants to be a little bit closer than range 5 in order to really kind of be hitting things, at least, right?
Yeah. So I've seen some people say that Rocket and Groot should be seen as a 5-point character. In some ways, maybe it's fine just to say, okay, Groot is the toughness of a 5-point character. Rocket has the damage output. So it's okay that Groot doesn't attack. You're probably not getting the best value at that point. It's probably not true that Rocket shoots like a 5 and Groot is tough like a 5. And that's ignoring inevitable problems that you're going to run into. Like, this is an alternating activation game. What if you want to move forwards? One of your characters moves first and then Groot can't protect Rocket. Or if Rocket is always standing next to Groot, what happens if someone throws Groot into Rocket? He just goes squish, right?
Yeah, he literally just explodes. Yeah, and the follow-up too is like, by taking those two characters, right, we've kind of talked about it, like, that's two activations for 5 points as well, right? So if you're playing a priority game, you could definitely hurt yourself there as well.
Yes. Could be really good for some scenarios and objectives, but could be problematic for others.
So the last thing, we kind of talked about it before, is small stature, and this is the character always benefits from cover. And this is an interesting rule, and it has kind of a couple... Despite its simplicity, it has some interesting interactions, right, Pat?
It does. What are the interactions?
Oh, well, I mean, he hits cover from attacks within range 2. I think that's important to point out.
Oh, yeah.
So it doesn't follow kind of the normal rules for cover. Basically, he has cover unless something specifically says he does not, right?
Right. So, for example, if he's being attacked by an attack that ignores cover, like Doc Ock's lasers... Or if he's attacked by Venom because of his symbiote ability.
Yep, but again, like, it's just a little weird thinking that he does get cover from attacks coming in at that closer range. So I just wanted to point that out to people. Just wanted to make sure people were aware of that as they kind of consider taking the little fella.
Yeah, he's cool.
So, Pat, I have a serious question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of us is Rocket and which one of us is Groot?
Oh, my gosh. So Groot is big and tough, powerful when angered, and universally adored. Rocket is dangerous, a little bit cute. I don't know, man.
Why? Difficult. If you're on the Discord or Facebook, let us know. Is Pat Rocket? Is Pat Groot? Which one am I? Just let us know on social media. I'd be interested to know what you think. So we have a whole lot of tactics cards to kind of go along with them. And we could just cut it short and say, basically, you get four different ways to generate three Winget tokens. But I think we're actually going to take a minute and go through the tactics cards. And the one I kind of wanted to start talking about was actually Deadly Duo, because we just kind of covered Rocket, we just covered Groot, and this is their kind of, this is their combo card, right? This is their tag team
card. Yeah, this is a really cool card. It lets you spend power from each of them, two per character, and allows Rocket to make three attacks, three of his normal attacks that are range 5/5 damage, on three different targets, and they have to be on different targets. You can't shoot the same poor character three times. It has to happen during Rocket's activation, but it's a lot of shots, right? These three attacks are in addition to his two actions, so he could potentially be making five attacks during that activation.
No, and it's a great way to prime him, right? Because these specifically say they have to be plasma rifle attacks, right?
Yeah.
So he should theoretically be gaining a decent amount of power coming off of these, right? Which could set him up for then like three plasma rifle attacks, like Pat said, against three different targets, and then three Hadron Enforcer attacks kind of followed up right after that.
Yeah, two Hadron Enforcers, yeah.
Oh, yep, I'm sorry. Two, obviously, for his activations. I was just mistalking all over the place on this pod. But I think it's pretty powerful. I'm not usually a huge fan of the duo cards, but if you're going to take the super character known as Rocket and Groot, I think Deadly Duo definitely deserves some consideration.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fun. I think it will reward you if you do move Rocket and Groot forwards in order to make the most out of Groot, then Deadly Duo is going to be better, because even with range 5, I think it will be hard to find three separate targets if Rocket is cowering towards the back of the table, and it'll be much easier if you're being aggressive with them. But I think the card is good. When I saw it, I had to look through every existing tactics card to see if I could come up with any combos, but unfortunately I can't. There's only two tactics cards in the game right now that increase your damage for your whole activation. One is Doom Prophecy, one is Smash. Neither of them benefit Rocket at all, because Smash looks at your size. Rocket is size 1, so he can't get any damage from it. And Doom Prophecy requires you to make physical attacks. Rocket doesn't have any physical attacks. But this is something to keep an eye on in future. If there was a magical card that was Doom Prophecy for energy attacks, then Rocket would be pretty terrifying with Deadly Duo.
Can't you smash a light post again, one additional die?
No, what happens is you have to smash terrain that's smaller than you and you get that many die. So he would have to smash a size 0 terrain and get 0 die.
For some reason in my head, I was thinking it was equal to or smaller than. But again, I don't have my card in front of me, so... Deadly Duo, I think, is a fine card. I think it's a great way to generate Winget tokens. And I think this is kind of the card that Pat talked about, right? Where there might be a great opportunity to use Deadly Duo, or worst case, it does provide you with some of those Winget tokens if you're playing in the Guardians Alliance.
Yeah, it's cool.
Affiliation, excuse me.
The other card I'd like to talk about following this is the second card that comes in the same box, and that is Groot's card. We are Groot. What does this one do, Sam?
It's an unaffiliated active card, and Groot may spend 3 power. Again, Groot wants so much power. Can we give Groot the power gem? That's a joke. I don't really want to give Groot the power gem. And it's Groot and allied characters within range 4 remove 2 damage. That's a lot of healing.
That's a lot of healing. So we have existing tactics cards that heal. Patch Up is more efficient if you're healing a single target and more flexible, but as soon as you're healing more than one person, We Are Groot starts to really shine. And if you can live the dream and heal 3 or more characters, it's just so much of your opponent's hard work is going to be undone. It could be very, very strong indeed.
Yeah, combined with Groot's initial healing, it's a very interesting card. And I'm interested to see if this does actually allow you to go with like a fatter hit point kind of tanky team. I'm really interested to see it on the battlefield. It's I like it. I like it a lot, personally.
Yeah, I think...
Go on. A lot of people take Patch Up, right? And Patch Up is like a 1-to-1 healing, right? So 3 to heal 2 isn't horrible. And then when you factor in, he can hit additional people with it. And it does hit Groot as well. So it's Groot and allied characters within four of him.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think it might do interesting things to the way people play the game, because if your opponent has this card, you probably want to make sure you're focusing your damage even more than normal, right? You don't want to be spreading your damage around. You don't want to be making a plan where you do lots of damage in a round so that you can activate first and daze several characters before they activate. It kind of forces you to play in a different way. So it might have some value even if it doesn't get used. At which point, hey, cash it in towards the end of the game for Wingate tokens.
I think that's going to be our ongoing bit for like every tactics card we cover for the rest of this game.
Yep.
Those would be a fantastic Wingate token. Yeah, that's a good point about just making someone play differently when we are Groots on the table. It'll be I think it's powerful. I like it. I don't love the idea of taking two characters for 5 points and two tactics cards. So I don't know whether I'd be taking Deadly Duo or We Are Groot. But I like it. I like it a lot. So are we ready to jump over to Star-Lord's cards?
Yes, let's do it. So Star-Lord has two cards plus his power gem, right? He has got...
Yes, and Panic Grip City as evacuation continues as crisis.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the crisis card in our after credits scene. Let's go straight to his first tactics card, Crew of the Milano, and this is kind of like the signature Guardians of the Galaxy card. Just like we have cards like Wakanda Forever and Avengers Assemble, this is the card that exemplifies the Guardians of the Galaxy and allows every member of the Guardians on the table to spend a power to benefit from its effect.
Yeah, and it's a strong one. It's interesting. I guess I might as well just read it, right? Guardians of the Galaxy, active. Any number of allied Guardians of the Galaxy may immediately spend one power to play this card. Each character that spent power removes all special conditions and cannot suffer special conditions this round.
Mm. So it's really hard to quantify how good this is. It's definitely not, because the other cards we've seen that affect everyone have been proactive, right? You play it, you get to move. You play it, you get to attack. That's really great because you know exactly what it's going to do. Whereas this is defensive. And obviously there's situations where removing all special conditions is superb. And there's other times when it's really bad. When you're playing it across a whole team, you're probably not going to play it on every character because it's very unlikely they'll all be suffering from special conditions. But just playing it on one character is good. Right? Removing Stagger for a power, that's superb.
No, absolutely. I mean, we can look at the Avengers Second Wind, right? A lot of times I was taking that to remove Stun off of Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has the additional benefit of the heal tacked onto it. So this could be very powerful. I've seen more and more like bleed synergy lists built around like Winter Soldier and Hela mm-hmm. been kicked around. So being like bleed immune essentially for a round would be interesting. And yeah, again, there's a lot of powers we haven't seen in the game yet. Hex, Incinerate are the ones that kind of immediately come to mind.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to see how this ages. But at its core, I like it. It's not Wakanda Forever powerful. It's not Avengers Assemble. But I think it's a good card. What do you think?
I think there's enough. I haven't done the maths on this, and like now I kind of wish I had. But I think there's enough status effects in the game that you always want to include this in your eight if you're playing Guardians, and then you decide probably before the game based on your opponent's characters whether or not it makes your five. But I think it's worth it. If your opponent has a character with Stagger, it's worth it. And certainly if your opponent's playing with characters like Star-Lord who can apply a lot of effects, it's going to be worth it. One thing that I'm a little bit dubious about, and this reminds me of what I said about Wingate as well, but this is an effect that's better on more powerful characters, right? Stagger hurts Hulk a lot more than it hurts Black Widow because you lose a more powerful attack that's worth more threat. And the Guardians that we've seen aren't very powerful. So I don't know how I feel about that. Like if Hulk or Thor were Guardians of the Galaxy, I would like this card a lot more.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about synergizing where it fits. I 100% agree. If you're planning on playing Guardians, this would make my tactics card list. This would make my roster. I don't know if it will make every game, though, is kind of where I was going with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good, but it's situational enough that it's not a must-have.
Yeah, and absolutely. And like you said, it'll be interesting kind of when, you know, once we get Gamora and Nebula and kind of they expand, just to kind of see where it fits in. But again, for what we're reviewing right now, which is just we know about Rocket, we know about Groot, we know about Star-Lord, it's got some Scornergy, right? Where it doesn't quite synergize. I want like a big heavy hitter. I want some giant honking. I want Thanos to benefit from this, right? So yeah, it'll be interesting. Is there anything else about Crew of the Milano, or can we talk about Rocket Boots?
Yeah, let's talk about Rocket Boots. So Rocket Boots is a really cool card. It's super fun. I love the artwork with Spider-Man on his Rocket Boots. He looks very unhappy. But Rocket Boots is interesting for a couple of reasons. It costs nothing, right? It has no power cost, and it gives a really small effect. It gives your character flying. But then it also has a secondary effect, which is you have a random effect at the end of the round. You might get more movement. You might suffer a negative condition. So things I like about this. One, I like the synergy with Crew of the Milano, right? You can use Rocket Boots and Crew of the Milano because Crew of the Milano means you can't suffer conditions for a round. You never have to worry about the negative effect of the Rocket Boots. So I think it's cool that it's in this pack with that card. And I also think it's cool as just a way to do a low impact ability that's fun for a low cost. The obvious synergy is with the drop-off card, where suddenly you can make any character fly, and that means you can have Hulk dropping off MODOK, or vice versa, which is pretty cool to think about.
My microphone is muted. Yeah, it's an interesting card. I like it as a setup card. I'm going to have a hard time personally finding room for it. We've kind of talked about how tight 8 tactics cards is, right? The one thing I do want to say is it doesn't cost any power. It's really, really, really interesting to me how much power Star-Lord can generate. And he's like, yeah, but I don't need any of it. I got rockets. So it's just it's a fascinating card.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. But I think it's one of those cards that you take if you have a very specific plan and probably no other time. But that's fine. I mean, there's a lot of cards in the game. It's good that you have cards that you only take occasionally, because they're not all going to be all-stars that you take in every game. That would be impossible.
For sure. I think that's enough about Rocket Boots. His next card is Infinity Gem Power. Pat, what do we think about this?
So powerful. So it's really simple. It's pretty cool. It gives you one power for being an Infinity Gem and one extra power for being the Power Gem. So the bearer of the Power Gem pays one threat and they get two extra power per power phase. So a normal character like Star-Lord generates three power instead of one. It's just so much power. It seems good. It's a very clear upgrade that has a lot of synergy. It lets you use your powerful abilities more. It lets you use more team tactics cards. It lets you make more sweet turn one plays like we're going to talk about next week. I can see why you want it, for sure. For me, it's easier to see why this is appealing than the Mind Gem, because the Mind Gem gives you a superpower that you may or may not want to use, whereas I always want more power. But like you said before, Sung, I don't know if Star-Lord is the character that I would really want to give it to that often.
Yeah, I mean, rarely do I say it in this game, but like, does Star-Lord actually need more power? Every other character needs more power.
He definitely likes it.
And don't get me wrong, Star-Lord can use power. I don't mean to. I know we keep saying that. I mean, he has ways to use his power, right? He just attacks, uses more cards. It's an interesting card. I like it. I love that it comes in at half a rocket, right? One threat. I think it's a good addition, and it creates some interesting list building options. I'm excited for who in the future can possibly use it. And again, I'm excited to see, like, for 4 points, do you just slap the gem on him and make him just like this really high powered? He's going to use my utility crisis cards, or excuse me, my utility tactics cards. I'm sorry, I've been misspeaking left and right. And then he's a blaster. You can kind of take it as kind of the leader of the affiliation. I definitely think it has some play, and I all in all, I really like it. I like all the Guardian characters we've talked about today. There comes clear synergies, and I'm excited to see him on the table.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. Couple of things I wanted to add about this card. We're going to talk about it in the after credits scene, but the Power Gem with Star-Lord has natural synergy with the crisis that he comes with, which requires you to spend a lot of power. So that's really cool. And I also just like the idea that because he generates 3 power a turn and Phil Auto costs 3, he can, on his first turn, double advance to somewhere relevant, and then you can activate him at the start of turn two, and you can do two full auto attacks trying to get those elemental blasts. And that can be a very, very powerful opening volley for your second turn.
No, that's a great point. It absolutely can be.
So to answer your question, I think he can use the power. I don't think it's wasted on him. But you're right, it's not a must-have either.
Yeah, like I said, I think because it's not a must-have, right, I think that's what we look for, right? We want to make decisions when we're creating rosters, when we're playing the game. We don't want Atomic Mass Games to make them for us. And I think they've done a great job here, right? There are clear pros, there are some cons with it, and you have to figure that out. And, you know, I think it'll be variable a lot kind of game to game. So I'm excited to see what kind of Sarlords end up on the table. If you are in the Discord, let us know, or let us know on social media what you think of it. And again, like I said, in the after the credit scene, which is a bonus episode for patrons, a short episode, we're going to be going over his crisis, Panic Grip City as evacuation continues. Well, that kind of wraps up our review of the Guardians of the Galaxy characters we have so far. And we did it. We're under time. So let us know who you think Rocket is. Let us know who you think Groot is. And then patrons, thank you so much. Stay tuned for the after the credit scene for Panic Grip City as evacuation continues. And to everyone out there who listened, thank you so much for listening. We really, really, really do appreciate it. And Pat, as always, man, it's been a blast.
Thank you.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of. Once in a lullaby, somewhere across the Bifrost, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
That was a weird segue. Pat, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Nope. We're good.